The Oracle of Luna is a podcast with me, Bridget Ingalls, as your host. Here we have conversations with real live, present day goddesses who are actively and courageously doing their magical work in the world. Each episode is a bewitching journey with relevant discussions on topics such as Wiccan pagan spirituality, writing, culture, magical practices, art, ritual, and the craft in its many forms.
I'm very pleased and honored to welcome Ruth Barrett to my podcast today. Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's really exciting to have you on my show. And how are you doing today, Ruth?
You know, I'm doing really well. I'm in a really pretty creative space right now. I'm obviously concerned about everything else that's happening in the world right now. Everything seems to be very amped up. And at the time of this recording, there's a hurricane that's bearing down on Louisiana. So, you know, I'm noting the different forces that are occurring while we're having this conversation. And, you know, there's always things happening in the world, obviously, that are dramatic. Seems especially dramatic. Yeah. So that's the context of the conversation today.
Okay. So I think we're going to just kind of get started. I'm just going to jump right in here and get to know you a little bit better. So first off, how did the role of Dianic priestess come about, and what does it entail? How did your journey start?
Well, my journey started actually when I was very, very young. I mean, we have to go back many decades. We have to go back to, you know, the late 1960s into the early 1970s, when there was not a goddess movement. There was this thing that became the goddess movement had not happened. And instead, there was a lot of really interesting things going on in America. Social movements that were happening. The women's liberation movement was happening. The gay liberation movement was happening. The ecology movement was just getting off the ground. I mean, so many things were happening. Convergence, you know. So it's always interesting now to look back. Before there was this thing called women's spirituality, and certainly within that context, goddess spirituality, as sort of, I think of it as a subset within women's spirituality. Right. And I think that, again, you know, all things that become movements have their source points. And so because of feminism, because of women began to, you know, what we call second wave feminism. So we're talking about not the suffragettes. We're talking about the next incarnation of women who were fighting for equal pay for equal work and reproductive rights, things like that, which were some of the prime concerns. And that really sparked so many women to began looking at religion as a place where there was clearly imbalanced in terms of the male-dominated religions. So that piece of it was really how I got engaged. And even as a child, and I mean literally a child, where I began to question the sex of God as being male. And I started doing that when I was, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, and began writing poetry to goddess, using that word instead of God. And the context for my religious upbringing was in Reconstructionist Judaism, which is a fourth branch of Jewish of the different branches of Jewish tradition, which actually came out of post World War II. And so the founder of the movement, who, by the way, never intended to create a fourth movement, but basically it evolved into that. There was a lot of questioning post-World War II about God as male, God as a supernatural being, the concept of the chosen people, a more scientific approach, I guess, to the God concept.
Uh-huh.
And also it was a denomination that really responded to social movements. So, for example, the rabbi of the congregation I grew up in was very, very early on opposing the war in Vietnam from the pulpit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea that politics and religion were separate were never part of my understanding. That if you considered yourself to be a spiritual person or a religious person, it would inherently mean that those values that you hold would apply to the rest of your life and, you know, what you believe in and what you vote for and what you eat and what you do and how you treat people.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things. So, and my family was one of the founding families in that movement. And so I was given really the freedom to decide what did God mean?
Right.
What did God even mean? And so it deeply influenced me, continues to influence me, because I think that that understanding of, well, I haven't even said what that understanding is yet, but the idea that God being the creative force in the universe that makes things happen was really more of how I was raised. It was not ascribed to a particular sex of a deity.
Right.
And so, and yet, as a child, metaphorically speaking, it made sense to me that, well, this God concept should, if we're going to be speaking in as humans and the human tendency to sex deity, that it would be female, because females give birth to life. It was not a faith-based concept. It was something that I could understand on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And so it felt very rational to me that the God concept would be best understood in female terms.
Okay.
And also and this is an important piece for me that I continue to work with in all the rest of my work, is that as a people move through time, you have to look at the customs and traditions and symbols that are being used in any religion and make them relevant for the times that you're living in.
Absolutely.
And so things never are, if something appears to be dead, well, then bury it, you know, or give it a new meaning that you can work with it in the times that you're in, not what was then. And
right.
So, you know, the founder of the movement, one of the quotes that I love was, "The past has a vote, but not a veto."
Ah.
So, you know, you can source from the past. You can find your place to begin there, but you don't stop there.
Right.
That's what I have done with it. And of course, I never knew I would then be taking it into feminist witchcraft, and, you know, either did my family, but there it was.
Yeah.
Again, those were the times. So
yeah.
coming out of that, and also deeply observing ritual, home ritual, holidays, things like that. That was again a part of my upbringing, and but not rote ritual, not ritual that you do with no idea about why you're even bothering doing it. And so I'm very thankful, really, to my parents for really helping me to understand the importance of ritual and why it matters. And its importance for strengthening connection to history, to family, to everyday life. And I've taken that forward in my own way.
Nice. Yeah, it's our early beginnings that really influence us for our later work.
Yes.
Very important. So what type of ritual, may I ask, is it just kind of simple, simple based on kind of yearly festival or holidays or just,
Are you talking about in the past,
yeah, in the
or
past.
am I up? Well, yes. Well, the Jewish holidays are
Right.
based on seasonal holidays,
Okay.
as well as weekly, with
Oh,
the
okay.
Sabbath and things like that. So,
Yeah. Okay.
yeah, and daily, frankly, there's you can do daily as well as weekly, as well as monthly, as well
Yeah.
as certain of the high holy days. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I grew up Catholic, so it's similar going to mass and masses and holidays, but it was very formal type of ritual based on dramatic, a lot of drama.
Yes.
But those early foundations really can influence us for our later work. So it's
Right.
fascinating.
Well, for better or for ill,
Yeah, right.
it can go the other way as well. So, I found that I could really, it was a good springboard for me.
Exactly. Okay, awesome. So in the what was your next kind of evolution of bringing forward your Dianic priestessing?
A lot of things converged in the early 70s for me. And like I said, I mean, I'm in February, I'm going to be 68, so I'm trying to cover a lot of territory here. But I'm telling you, I just started when I was really young. So, and it had to do with being in the right time in the right place. And I grew up in Los Angeles, California, where there was just a lot going on. And so I got involved at my last year of high school. I got involved with the original Renaissance pleasure fairs, which were the fairs that sort of were the parents of all the other subsequent fairs that are now happening and have been happening for a long time. So I got involved with the fairs and, began in the capacity of music, singing with a trio or duo, I worked with a master puppeteer doing singing for his amazing rod puppetry. I did a lot, but what I was always found myself attracted to was magic, and that was a place at that time where we didn't call it pagan because, again, we didn't know the words for it at that time. There were a lot of people there that I would recognize now as pagan spirited people. And it was where, because it was sort of a time set out of time, this alternate reality, as someone who worked there, and you would live there over the weekend. And so it was my first time really being involved with alternative community. And so that was a place where I feel like my cat's whiskers sense of magic really got honed. Where and to this day, I mean, I know I can't, I mean, obviously, I guess it's subjective, but I have a pretty good sense of shit and shinola, as they say. I can tell, when something's real and when something is fake.
Yeah.
And so that was a place of enchantment. That was where I made a lot of connections. And one of the people that I began playing music with at that time, time and place, turned out that he was the younger brother of someone who became very famous later, named Starhawk. And so Mark Simos. And so we were friends, very good friends, and did music together there and also afterwards. And it was the old songs, that the old traditional ballads that that really hooked me in terms of folk music because of the way they affected me. Mm-hmm. There was something, again, my sniffing for where's the real magic, and I would find them. I would find those snippets, those tastes of it in some of the old, what they called supernatural ballads. And so when I went to college and stuff, I began to focus on folklore because, and of course, folklore always leads you to paganism, right. Always.
Yeah.
Just, you follow the trail and that's where it ends. And you find out, what's under the overlay of the customs and symbols. And also at the Renaissance Fair, I met Shekinah Mountain Water. And Shekinah Mountain Water, I met her in the early 1970s because she was also performing there with her two children.
Oh, fascinating. Wow.
And yeah, and she had her trio with her two young children, Freya and Frey. They had a trio they called the Sibyl. And they enacted myths on the streets of the Renaissance Fair.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I can see where this is going.
Yeah. And so, there was, Shekinah was in her, she had a different name then. But that's where I first met her acquaintance, and and later began to, we became friends, and I actually was in her first women's circle in Santa Cruz in 1975. And she was living there then, and where we would meet weekly with a group of women, and we talked about, what does it mean to have a sisterhood, and what about this what about goddess, and how do we use sound to go into trance, and mm-hmm. and enacting myths, and it was quite an it was a wonderful time.
It sounds very organic and kind of grassrootsy.
It completely, but because you just follow the trail, mm-hmm. you just take the next step. It's an amazing thing now to have the perspective of, you can find all the stuff about goddesses on the internet. You can, women's spirituality, goddess spirituality, feminist witchcraft. Witchcraft in general, all of this stuff is now like laid out for everyone. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was not.
Right.
And so there was this amazing sense of discovery that was very, to use your word, organic. I mean, it was, you just kept following, going here, going there, and eventually things began to fall into place. Ooh. So... that so the integration, obviously there's an integration of my musical sensibility and the spirituality innate in that,
right?
That was definitely evolving on the same track as my research eventually into goddess spirituality, which right. It's been a lot. I mean,
yeah.
after I lived in Santa Cruz, I moved to back to Los Angeles, and it was in 1976, I believe, where I met Z Budapest.
I was just going to say, she was around the same time starting her.
Yeah, I met Z Budapest, who was At the women's building there at the time, there was a women's building there for many years, and she was producing a play that she had written called Rise of the Fates. And so I found out about this, and oh my goodness, you know, it's and then I went there. I actually went there with my ex-husband at the time, who, and we walked into the women's building, and it wasn't appreciated that I brought a man in there. There was a lot of separatism at that time, and we were really confused why there was hissing going on in the background.
It's fascinating to me that this is all coming about at the time of a women's reproductive rights, women's empowerment. And also the goddess spirituality movement is coming into the forefront. It's an exciting and powerful time.
Very powerful time. And it's all interconnected. These are all interconnected issues, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, the other, another main person that was also living in Los Angeles at that time, was the archaeologist Maria Gimbutas. So Maria, was, of course, in her background, she was a Lithuanian immigrant, who fled, you know, many, many different persecutions in Lithuania over the years. But she was living in Los Angeles, at that time, and, teaching.
Was she teaching at UCLA or?
Yes, she was teaching at UCLA, and, you know, she was writing Goddesses and Gods of Old Europe. You know, and so, and it, she ended up being a neighbor of mine when I lived in Topanga Canyon, so all the, you know, there's just, again, a very rich of this, all these amazing things happening, but what happened after meeting Z Budapest, and, this was, I got involved with the Susan B. Anthony Coven number one. I would go, you know, to their mailing parties and, help get there the zine that was being produced there at the time. I would help, you know, do that, you know, lick the envelopes, you know, that kind of stuff.
Did you start writing then?
I was not writing then, but I already, again, I had a background that Z was interested in.
Yeah.
And so in 1980, Z decided that she was going to move north to Northern California, and she asked me if I would continue her work in Los Angeles. And I was 24 years old.
Young.
Yeah. And I was a new mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those, you know, moments of I'm terrified, and yes. Yes, that was where I, you know, spirit told me to go.
You were called forth.
yeah, and that was a really the right decision. That was an excellent choice on Z's part because of what I'd done with everything since then.
Yeah.
But I was left really on my own. That was it. So, but because of my own background in understanding about ritual, even with the women's rituals that we were doing at the time, were very different, of course, than any other kind of background. But again, there were certain components understanding about what makes ritual work that I was able to bring forward, as well as the music. You know,
right.
As well as, you know, and so much of what's happened, like goddess, like chants have become not just in the goddess movement, but in, you know, paganism in general. It's almost the liturgy.
Right.
And so I had that.
Yes.
And so things evolved. And but for me, I really just continue. I'm always learning.
Yeah.
I'm always making sure that I'm going deeper with what my understanding is, and if I learn something that contradicts or doesn't feel, you know, useful, I will change it.
Yeah.
And so over the years after that, I, you know, kept things going. People left. You know, the thing about spiritual leadership is that people are attracted to that person or they're not.
Yeah.
You know, so there are people who are attracted to the previous leadership, they and not so much to me. Mm-hmm. Others then came to me. And eventually, I helped to create the largest Dianic community in the world.
Yeah. So this is the Temple of Diana you're speaking about?
It wasn't Temple of Diana yet. It was Circle of Aradia. And Circle of Aradia is still happening.
Really? And so,
yeah, we have continued. This is very exciting. And I also want to make sure to say that this is the 50th anniversary of the Dianic tradition this
Woo!
Year. Yeah.
Yay!
And so I know. That's a lot of 50 years. And so we have been doing lots of events. Temple of Diana has been doing a lot of events. Temple of Circle of Aradia, I served as the center holder, as high priestess for Circle of Aradia for a couple of decades, and then I moved out of state.
Can I backtrack for a second?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you found the Circle of Aradia or was
yes.
that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And when I say it's still happening, it's because it is still happening. That circle is now a grove of Temple of Diana.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll kind of describe the structure, which may be helpful to help with confusion around all of this. But Circle of Aradia existed before Temple of Diana.
Okay.
And so we continued to provide community rituals. And since we have been doing this in an unbroken line for almost 50 years, it'll be 50 years this December for Solstice.
That is quite a milestone. Is it online? Have you converted to online?
Yes, we have. We have been doing, and it's been great because the center holder for Circle of Aradia is Sarah, she goes by Sarah Dwin, she pronounced it with an S, Sarah Dwin Rose Labrus, and she and I actually go back to those early days of the Susan B. Anthony Coven number 1.
Oh,
so she actually attended my ordination even in 1980. And so she is now the High Priestess of Circle of Aradia. And I get to facilitate with them online.
Oh.
It's been, you know, and so we've been doing these, the seasonal holidays. Of course, the next one is coming up in,
Maybon.
Yeah, it's coming up. In September next mm-hmm. month.
Yeah.
And then we'll be doing a very special one, Yule for the 50th anniversary. But we are also Temple of Diana. Let me go back on to that for a moment.
Okay.
So I met my life partner, Falcon River, in 1999. And it was then that I decided I was going to move. And I moved to the Midwest. And it was there that we decided to co-found our own 501c3, basically a Dianic temple.
Right.
With our specific history, you know, that has that lineage back to the early 1970s. And so Circle of Aradia is a branch.
Okay, I see.
Of Temple of Diana. Like, I'm living in Michigan. We live in Michigan, and our grove is called Guardians of the Grove.
Okay.
So we have our branch, but we're all Temple of Diana. We have the same training. We have the same, you know, we have the same style and approach.
Okay.
Because as you may know, Dianic tradition is notoriously eclectic.
Yes.
Okay. Notoriously so. And so, but one of the things that was very important to me, and something that I began doing when I became, you know, the center holder at Circle of Aradia, was how do you make something be something you can pass down? How can you take a spiritual tradition, mm-hmm. and make it, give it enough structure so that it is recognizable?
Right.
And so, and this is also the difference between, for me, between spirituality and religion. And the difference that my description of the differences is that spirituality is your relationship between you and all that is, mm-hmm. your relationship with her, that, or whatever you want to call
deity.
Okay. Yeah. Deity by whatever name you relate to. And that's personal. And then religion is really more about tribe. You know, it's what we do when we come together.
Right.
And if there isn't enough glue in practice, in ethics, enough, then it's harder to do things together that are powerful if you really want to do things to make change happen.
Yeah, there has to be a certain amount of structure. Otherwise, there's not enough glue to...
Exactly. Yes. And so that's what I set about to do. Because I don't believe you can pass down spirituality.
Right.
Effectively.
Right.
Not, I mean, you might be one-on-one, you know.
Yeah.
But in terms of movement and in terms of something that is recognizable, that's what I set out to do.
Okay,
and
that's really important. That really shifts it into more, to me, more professional or kind of, gosh, I don't want to say like religious movement, but it's more formalized.
Well, it is religion. It's what makes religion religion. Mm-hmm. It is. It actually is. And you know, for so many women, even the word makes us want to, you know, run to the exit,
right,
you know. And yet, it is not religion itself that I think is in and of itself that is wounding. It's what is the structure of the religion, and is it based in a patriarchal hierarchical system,
right?
Or is it based on something that Rhian Eisler calls the hierarchy of actualization,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, some of us are, you know, have gone out to try to attain certain skills, mm-hmm. and we bring those skills to our communities and we serve with those things, you know, and so it's a recognition that it doesn't make anyone better than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that's a different model, right?
Right.
It's about just recognizing that there are people who excel at certain things. Therefore, give them the freaking job.
Right.
You know, it's like if someone can't hold a rhythm in their with their drum, maybe give that role to someone who can keep a pace.
Yeah.
You know. It's not about, oh, you know, it's at least there's it brings about a quality in the rituals and in the ability to create powerful moments.
Yes. And hold the sacred. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So there is that. And so we're like Daughters of Diana gathering is a gathering that we've been doing every year for a number of decades now, but because of COVID, we are now doing that online.
Okay.
And so that's happening over Halloween weekend, and Daughters of Diana gathering.org is where you can find out about it.
Okay.
And that is, we're going to have,
we could go mm-hmm. to the links and stuff at the end, mm-hmm. but I wanted to kind of ask you, mm-hmm. Your books.
Yes.
You started right. When did you start writing books? And one of the books that you have written is one of mm-hmm. my favorites, Women's Rights, Women's Mysteries. Mm-hmm. Very inspirational to me as a Dianic Wiccan priestess. And I also recommended it to anybody who joined my circle. So I was just wondering if you could discuss a little bit about when and how this book came about.
Sure. Well, it's all in this continuum of leaving a legacy.
Right.
It's all in the same kind of vein of how do we pass on what we know.
Okay.
And so, and that's also an ethic in Dianic tradition, is like being able to pass on to the next, you know, not only next generation, but even, you know, just how do we propagate this?
Right.
And so when I was in my 40s, I began to think I needed to write this stuff down.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I began that process. I started by recording classes that I taught and then transcribing them as sort of a way to begin.
Right. Okay.
And then I began to, you know, basically take, you know, organize my approach. This book is, and for those of you who are listening who don't know this book, it is not a cookbook. This book is not about telling you, oh, you do this, then you do that, then you do this, then you do that. And it really is about how to cultivate our intuitive knowing mm-hmm. and bring it into form.
Right.
I'm very thankful that my approach works so well.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. And I have a way of teaching it. And I do teach online, by the way. I teach online a lot right now. I teach ritual making, I teach magic and spellcraft and all kinds of things. So, but and there's things that, by the way, I want to say that you can't teach online. There's energetics for magic and ritual that yeah. are just not, they don't translate.
I agree.
And I guess what I want to say is that it has brought me a level of connection to women outside of I never would have had an opportunity to work with mm-hmm. because they are living in Europe or New Zealand or Australia or, you know, that I get to work with because of working over the internet now and with classes. And yet there are things there are things I can teach effectively. Thank goodness.
Yes.
But it's also, I do need to say, I don't think magic was ever, ever intended to be taught over the internet.
Right.
So there is that too. There is that. So I've had to reconfigure. I've had to, you know, it's been a really very challenging, exciting process to how to translate, you know, what can I do? How can I effectively teach certain things not in my usual comfort zone when we're together in a circle?
Right.
You know, yeah. Together.
Yeah. And having, you know, participated in several online rituals myself and led mm-hmm. Some as well, I do have to agree with you. It's not the same. And it's... Mm-hmm. The subtle energies are not there.
Yeah, it's we don't get there. It's been interesting. On one level, I'm amazed how well it can work in certain ways. And in other ways, of course not. I mean, yeah. we're not in the same proximity, holding hands, breathing together, you know,
raising
all
energy.
The different.
Yeah.
Raising energy together, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it has also been a lifeline. I'm very thankful for the technology that is enabling us to have this conversation, for example.
Yes,
you know, and being able to reach out to women who are in many places.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. So what about any upcoming plans for the future? New books, mm-hmm. Workshops, classes, events, concerts?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, and you haven't even discussed your Mountain Dulcimer playing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, oh gosh. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of exciting. I'm excited about this fall. I have some new classes that I'm offering. I teach, like I've said, I do, personal ritual making classes on that, and I have one specifically for women who are 58 and older who are interested in learning to create their own croning ritual.
Oh,
And so I'm going to be
crazy.
offering that in October, and I'm looking forward to that a lot. That'll be a like I'm used to doing these 2-hour classes,
Yeah.
for so many weeks.
Great.
But this is going to be a one-shot deal for, like a 5-hour event.
Okay.
And I have that, and I have an online concert that I'm really excited about that's happening for Halloween. It's going to be it's a concert called Back to the Bones Halloween concert, and it's all Halloween, the folklore of the holiday, and it's going to be online through this really interesting organization called onlineconcertthing.com. Dot com. And
Okay.
I think they're out of Canada. And I went to their website, and it was a very interesting experience because I was looking at who is playing through this venue, onlineconcertthing.com. And it was either dulcimer players or pagan musicians.
Fascinating.
And I'm like, I'm meeting right in the middle, So this concert is going to happen through them October 23rd, and then it's going to be also like another replay, I guess, of it is happening on the 30th of October, which is also the same day that we're doing our big Daughters of Diana Hallowmas ritual, but it will be earlier in the day, and so someone can watch one or both or not at all or whatever. But that's happening, and then I'm working on a book of Mountain Dulcimer tablature. I'm finally getting that happening, where I'm putting together a book of some of my favorite tunes and songs for Mountain Dulcimer players.
And how could
And
somebody find out more about your music? Are you on
sure.
Spotify or?
I have a website if you want to buy the physical. I'm sort of old school. I mean, there's
Okay.
digital download people who are, selling my music, but I if you want to buy it directly from me, I can only sell you a physical CD. And that's dancingtree.org. Dancingtree.org, and my store is there. Yeah, during the pandemic, I actually recorded and released Once in Future Amazons. I think it's the best thing I've ever done. It's a really long album. It's of chants, songs, and instrumentals.
Oh, I will look
And
forward to that. Yeah,
yeah,
I
my
really
co
liked Invocation to Free Women, I believe.
Invo Yeah, Invocation to Free Women was done in like 1985.
I love it, and I played that for a couple of my rituals, and women really, really responded to it. So anyway, I just wanted to give you a shout out for that because
Oh, thank you.
inspirational to us.
Thank you. Yeah, and so that's a really good example, that particular song, of how I combine traditional melodies with original words, because the melody of that particular one was based in a Jacobite song, an old Jacobite song, and I always retain a few words from the original. Anything I borrow, I always leave a trail. So I will leave a few words from the original song that I took the melody from.
That's a good way to honor.
That's the whole point. Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. So, well, you sounds like you have a lot of busy upcoming events and plans
Yes.
and
Yes.
we'll
Oh, I just thought of something else. Yeah, also happening in October, I'm going to be presenting at the Parliament of the World's Religions, It's a really amazing organization that represents every religion that you could possibly think of. And there, it's going to be virtual, and it's also going to be in October.
Okay.
I'm going to be, I was asked to do a workshop. I'm going to be doing chants for female rites of passage.
Oh, beautiful.
So I'm going to be doing a workshop for that, again, virtual.
Uh-huh.
And then a 45-minute version of that Halloween concert that I mentioned mm-hmm. is going to be edited for that. So okay. that will be that there will be a version of it shown there, a longer version, obviously, uh-huh. an online concert thing. But okay. yeah, so that's happening also.
Oh, that's amazing. It sounds like now, how would we find out about, like, how would we get the links to all this? Do you have a newsletter or online Facebook?
I have, if folks want to like actually get notices from me, mm-hmm. I can give you two links.
Okay.
Okay. And that would be for music. It's really hard. I kind of have, I guess it shouldn't be separate, but it sort of is just because I can't organize it any differently. But dancingtree.org is how you could sign up on to get notices about concerts and music stuff. And then guardiansofthegrove.org is my classes. If you sign up for there, you'll actually get notices from me.
Okay.
I've gotten much better at doing this, at letting people know. And you could also, you know, to find out about stuff happening with Temple of Diana, you can go to templeofdiana.org. And I organized something on the Temple of Diana site called the Moon Hut. And the Moon Hut .org is on the Temple of Diana website, and it actually contains a lot of wonderful class offerings by other teachers in the temple. We have some fantastic teachers on many, many different topics that women would be interested in. And so they're all, I've listed a lot of those under the Moon Hut. And so,
great.
There's a
lot of information there for us, and I'm definitely going to be checking out all three of these, and probably subscribe to any newsletter you have.
Yeah. And if you want to get direct, like for the rituals, for the seasonal rituals that I'm also been blessed to help with, circleofaradia.org is the website to find out about that stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today and learning about your background and your evolution and all the very inspirational and powerful rituals and classes you lead. And I had a great time, and hope you did too.
I did. It's like my head is spinning a bit trying to remember all of this, the interconnections here, but that's right. Also what happened, you know, it's a very intricate web.
Yes. I was just going to say that you, just the evolution, the weaving of the web and how mm-hmm. it brought you here to what you're doing today.
Yeah.
Just fascinating. I'm very interested in what happens historically and in society at the time that brings art and religion together and movements. So this has really been really interesting, and I learned a lot. So thank you so much again, Ruth.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was really a pleasure. I love that you're doing this. It's wonderful.
Yeah, very good. So I'm just going to close out here. May you walk mm-hmm. with the goddess, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.